In this edition of Hoopsology, Matt and Justin welcome Sporter Coach Jacob Feldman to discuss how the relationship between the NBA and Apple led to the integration of NBA League Pass on the Apple Vision Pro. We get Jacob's insight into the viability of VR in sports, NBA and Apple, social media as an ally or competitor to leagues, Netflix entering the sports realm with WWE, and a lot more. This was a fantastic chat. This was the first time Jacob has been on Hoopsology, and it was really great to get his insight regarding just the relationship between technology and sports as those two worlds are intersecting at a very rapid pace in this day and age. Hoopsology is presented by Ball's Life, and now, Jacob Feldman. He is a sports business reporter for Sportico. We have the pleasure in welcoming Jacob Feldman onto Hoopsology. Welcome, Jacob.
Thanks so much for having me. Joy to be here.
Thanks for coming on to the show. Really appreciate it. And the reason why I wanted to have you on here is just seeing the integration of technology and not only the NBA, but just basketball in general. And Our show, we cover the NBA, there's main topics, of course, but also we cover basketball culture in its entirety as well. So you're an expert in just sports business, so it's awesome to have you on. And I just want to get your framing of specifically the NBA and Apple, their relationship as a whole in terms of, like, before, you know, actually seeing just the integration of the NBA League Pass on Apple Vision Pro, just their relationship as a whole in terms of Adam Silver and Tim Cook, in terms of kind of their dealings, in terms of their vision, in terms of how they want to see the NBA integrated to consumers using not only Apple Vision Pro, but just Apple products overall.
Sure. It's a really interesting relationship. And you know, for me, I cover the intersection of sports and technology. So my job is really covering these big tech companies, whether it's Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, et cetera, and these leagues, right? The NFL, NBA, MLB, on and on. And to me, Apple and the NBA are the most similar out of, like, if you were to take one from column A and one from column B, just as companies, the way they think. Both of them are very smart, but also very culture savvy, very fashion savvy, right? So it's an interesting mix of, you know, you have your nerdy element and you have your kind of your street cool element. And I think that's what's made Apple so successful for 20 years is making computers cool. And the NBA has kind of gone from the other direction, right? Taking this sport, this culture and bringing in data and bringing in smarts and intelligence to it. And so I think they think very similarly. You get Tim Cook and Adam Silver, or any of the top executives in a room, that, you know, they fit together in a way that makes a lot of sense. And so while they haven't had a particularly unique relationship when it comes to, you know, streaming games or anything along those lines, it does seem like, especially as things move forward, there is room for collaboration or experimentation between both sides.
So have you had a chance to use the Apple Vision Pro at all?
Yeah, so I've done a couple demos with the Apple Vision Pro. I've not yet acquired one myself, but I've gotten a good sense, and I've used the NBA app within it as well. So I've gotten a taste of that too.
So from a sports perspective, so not from productivity or just watching movies or playing games, but it's from a sports fan perspective, what do you think? Because I've heard, you know, the complaint is that the actual headset, it does get kind of wearing on you in terms of just wearing it for a long period of time. Did you experience that? Like, how was that experience to you in terms of viewing sports content? And do you think, despite the price, do you think it'll be enticing enough for consumers in the future? Because this is first generation. So this is the long game. We're talking 5, 10 years, 15 years from now. Do you think it will pose enough excitement for the sports fans to have to take a chance and get excited, even though they can't afford it now?
I would say my guess would be that in 8 to 10 years, something along these lines, whether it's smart glasses or smart goggles or a VR headset, is going to be fairly standard for a hardcore sports fan, would be my guess. And, you know, again, this is something I've been trying on various headsets for, you know, probably close to 10 years now. You know, I can still remember doing or watching rather a skateboarding competition in VR. This is probably 8-9 years ago that Tony Hawk put on, like, at his gym, essentially. And it was really cool. But for me, that's still kind of the best VR offers is these 10 to 15 to maybe 20 minute experiences. You go somewhere, you feel like you're seeing something in a new way, but you're not watching a 3-hour game this way. And you're not, you know, interacting or or doing a lot of stuff. You're putting it on, you're watching something, and you're taking it off. That to me is still right now where this technology is. But where it gets interesting is, like you were saying, as it gets more comfortable to wear, as it gets cheaper, and then, you know, the chicken and egg part of it, as they make more content because it's more comfortable to wear and cheaper and more people have it, then it does get increasingly interesting, I think. But we're still, I would say, a good 5 years, probably closer to 8 to 10 years away from that being a part of the everyday sports fan experience.
Jacob, you list a lot of factors that could cause hesitancy from the general consumer. I'm pretty... You know, I don't have a whole lot of experience with VR other than maybe some of those like short arcade like experiences that you mentioned mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Where do you think, just based on what you see, general consensus is on VR right now? I mean, is it in mm-hmm. line with a lot of things Justin and you have mentioned? Do you think there's even more hesitancy from the general consumer? I mean, how much of a hurdle do tech companies need to climb with this?
Yeah, I think it's a massive hurdle, to be honest. And I think, you know, it's funny because we can have a similar conversation kind of about blockchain and NFTs if we wanted to, but there's a lot of hype around virtual reality, again, going back 5-6 years. And I think there's enough hype that people tried some version of it. You know, there was a time when you could like put your phone in like a little holder and put that in front of your face and view things that way. And I think people tried it and it wasn't very good. And it made some of them nauseous, and they said, "I'm out." Right, and you know, the same with blockchain NFTs. It made some people nauseous, and they were like, "I'm out." So I think that's really the challenge: is how do you get them back in? And so that's where Apple entering this picture is a really key component, I think, because they've obviously built up so much trust, so much credibility with the average consumer. Like, oh, if Apple's doing it, maybe it's time for me to try it again. And so I think we are going to see that next phase. But I do think there's a lot of skepticism. And people just don't really know why they need it. And that's just the challenge, both for the device makers and then for the leagues as well.
So do you think it's going to go, if AR and VR, is it kind of mm-hmm. headed on the same path as 3D? Because there was a huge push for 3D, not only in theaters, but in the home as well, not only with video games, but just in the home theater experience. Do you see it heading in that direction? Because if that's the case, I think that's pretty worrisome.
I think VR is probably headed in that direction to some degree. It's already bigger than 3D, and we can talk about this a little bit, but to date, the most successful VR applications have been gaming, video games, right? So I think that market will continue to grow. We're seeing more and more sports applications kind of grow this. We can talk about that in a little bit, but when it comes to viewership, I do think it's more gimmick than greatness, and especially because the social element is just so difficult, right? You know, sports is such a social experience, but whether you're sitting next to somebody or texting somebody or just looking at Twitter while you're watching, just that connected element of it is hard to recreate. And I think that's another piece of this. We're probably 8 to 10 years of that being, you know, easy to do and kind of figuring out kind of what that looks like in VR. So that is all, again, more gimmick. What's interesting to me is I think all these companies see this now is what the product they have now is not the future, as you mentioned, and the product of the future is much lighter. You know, maybe it's even, you know, the size of my glasses that I'm wearing. And so when you get to that point and it's not a big hurdle to put on and it's not a big barrier, then you can do some really cool stuff. And so it'll be a question of just how quickly that technology comes, if it comes at all.
Jacob, there's long been this narrative that, and I think this is in part like trying to craft this image too, but that the NBA is on the cutting edge of technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, we mentioned this relationship and partnership potentially with Apple, but do you think in 2024 that is still a true statement with the NBA? Mm-hmm. I mean, compared to what you see in other sports leagues, I guess maybe my question more generally is which leagues are on the cutting edge argument there?
Yeah, it's a fantastic and fascinating question, and one I think about a lot. And I think you're very perceptive because it is so much about reputation, right? I mean, it's a lot about branding and all that. And I think the truth of it is that each of these leagues are forward thinking in slightly different ways, right? And have different priorities. I mean, the NBA has put more, I think, time and energy into its app than other leagues. You know, I think it redesigned its app. It's thinking a lot about how you follow players in addition to teams. It's experimenting with AI chatbots in there. So it's doing some interesting things there. They've been forward thinking when it comes to League Pass and micropayments and being able to buy the fourth quarter of a game. They lowered the price of League Pass, which I think was fairly forward thinking, and saying, look, we just need more people to watch this stuff, and then we'll figure out our media rights in the future and whatever. But we're at a critical juncture right now where if we don't hook these fans when they're 18, we're not going to get them ever. So they've been forward thinking in that way. I mean, what's impressive about the NFL, to turn the page a little bit, is just that they're innovating at such a large scale, right? They're massively popular. And so for them to go and put Sunday Ticket on YouTube is changes the nature of the internet in a lot of ways, right? They are such a Goliath that, you know, it's not something we haven't seen before. You know, MLB had YouTube games a few years ago, but because it's the NFL, it's going to change the way everyone operates. And so that's innovative. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes to make sure that's fluid. You get to other leagues. I mean, MLB is changing their rules. You know, that's innovative to kind of keep up with the times. You get to other sports. You know, F1 is changing where the races take place. NASCAR is putting a race in the middle of Chicago. So I think all now more than ever, these leagues are recognizing, hey, we do need to change our playbook because the world has changed so much. Media has changed so much. You know, kids are changing so much. And they're all doing it in different ways. It's been really interesting to see, you know, what works, what sticks. And then, you know, as you guys know, in the sports world, everyone's going to follow the leader, right? Whether it's a team doing something or a league doing something, if it works, everyone else is going to be doing it in a week's time.
So do you think with the NBA, they've thrown a lot of ideas at the wall, and most mm-hmm. notably during All-Star weekends, in mm-hmm. terms of just the LED courts mm-hmm. or just using AI. And I think some of these ideas seem okay, but I don't know how much of a real life application they would have. But I think the LED court in particular, I do think that does have some mm-hmm. real life application. What were your opinions of them rolling that out? And they were kind of using it sparingly because they didn't use it during the actual All-Star game. It was mm-hmm. more used for All-Star Saturday night. So what was your thoughts on the kind of LED court during NBA All-Star weekend?
Yeah, I think that's a great example of something that they're trying. And I agree. I think, you know, we can talk about All-Star and the flaws and potential there. It's clear that it's harder than ever to get people to pay attention to All-Star, right? I mean, the challenge at the end of the day is that we have access to LeBron James every day of the week, you know, and whereas 30 years ago, if you were a Michael Jordan fan, you maybe got to watch him once a week and then you never got to see him interact with the other stars of the day. And now, you know, we can see LeBron and KD going back and forth on Instagram, you know, on a Wednesday night. And so that's the biggest challenge. So I think they've been smart to integrate, you know, some new interesting things to get you to watch. The other really interesting thing I think about the LED court, and I think it shows a recognition that this is a TV product, right? It was interesting in arena, but it's not designed to elevate the in arena experience. I mean, the way we can even see on TV, it kind of glows. You know, it's kind of funky in person, especially if you get up close to it. But it represents this idea that, hey, we do need to change the way this looks on TV, starting with, you know, the court itself, what people are playing on. And that's another advantage the NBA has because other sports play on grass or turf, right? So the fact that you are playing on this like manufactured surface does open up some interesting possibilities. I wouldn't be shocked to see, you know, LED baselines or some of those elements kind of slowly worked in on a wider basis.
Yeah, it seems like there could be real tie-ins in terms of, like, you know, it sounds like such a simple example, but you think of like the yellow yard line, like this is where the first down marker is in the NFL. Seems like you could have a lot of things like, you know, calls being displayed mm-hmm. on the LED court, even simple things that maybe aren't as distracting to the viewer potentially. So it doesn't get, you know, too totally. Convoluted in that viewing experience.
Yeah, I think one of the best innovations, you know, that goes undersold is what TNT did with the shot clock, right? Putting that kind of on the court, making it easy to see, making it more dramatic, way it changes colors and things. I totally agree. I think some of the best things that have been done or little things on the margin like that just make it more exciting, more interactive, more engaging play to play.
You bring up the constant access that we have to our superstars, and I totally agree with that point. Where do you think we are in terms of like social media at large and mm-hmm. how the sport leagues specifically view social media? Because I think in the early, maybe like cuter, more innocent days of Twitter or X, you know, I think it was really a huge boost to mm-hmm. NBA fanhood. And maybe in some ways it still is. But it does feel like the environment's a lot different. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just me like thinking mm-hmm. nostalgically or something like that. But long story short, how do you think the leagues are feeling about social media in the modern era?
Yeah, it's changed rapidly. And the first big change was the pandemic, right? And so everyone is at home and all of a sudden, you know, more people are on social media, are interacting there. You know, that's kind of when TikTok takes off. And so I think that was one step in terms of, I think a lot of players became more active at through that because there's nothing else to do. And I think in the last year or two, we've seen kind of a walk back from that. And at the same time, like you've mentioned, you know, Twitter is no longer Twitter, right? So NBA Twitter was such a big part of the league's identity, the fans' identity. And so that has had to evolve in a lot of ways. And the other big change has been TikTok and YouTube and this growth of video. And this is, you know, where kids especially are spending their time more and more, less on these text or even photo-based services and more video. And so that's been a challenge for leagues. Obviously, it's an opportunity if you can figure out a way to compete, but it just means there's more and more competing for people's attention on a nightly basis when they're trying to decide, you know, what screen they're going to give their eyes to for a few hours.
Do you think, I'm sorry, Justin, one more thing, follow up to that. Sure. Do you think that the leagues view social media as in a way like this is stealing money from us?
I don't. I think that's pretty far gone.
Because there's also a lot of promotion, you know, in fairness.
Right, right. And I think they found ways to monetize. I mean, even, you know, on Twitter, oftentimes there'll be an advertisement that runs before highlights and the NBA is getting a good portion of that. And so I think that that's kind of evolved. And even for smaller leagues, you know, I've heard leagues, you know, that we'll convene panels of creators of social media influencers and say, hey, look, what can we do to help you make content about us? Like they want that. They feel the need for that. And for the time being, you know, the media companies are still paying massive amounts. It's going to go up again. And so I think that concern about trying to, you know, wrangle every last dollar out of social media is not there for the most part at the moment. Absolutely.
So to that point, since sports is very friendly for bite-sized content compared to, I would say, a television show in which you want to see the entire thing, sports, you can kind of get your fill through highlights. How important is this, the streaming deals in the future, do you think are going to be? Because I think right now, live sports content is a huge commodity, no matter if it's, you know, WWE or just, you know, the WNBA or just the NBA or so on. But yet, with the NBA, they thrive on kind of these bite-sized highlights. And I'm just wondering, do you think that the kind of the antiquated ways of measuring how a sporting event does just based on television ratings, is that kind of the way to go still in measuring a success of an event? Or do you think social metrics should be weighted more? Because it's just been a lot of conflict on that in terms of the traditional Nielsen ratings compared to, you know, a video blowing up on YouTube or on social media.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it, you know, I think the third answer there is like, why does it matter, right? It kind of depends on what you're using these numbers for, you know. So originally TV ratings were created for advertisers, right? For Coca-Cola and Pepsi to know how many people saw their ad. Like that's the purpose of TV ratings. And they've obviously taken on this existential, you know, is our sport dying because this number is a little lower than that number element. And I think we've seen in the last couple of years, those numbers are pretty fuzzy and can change based on who's counting what, when, why. And so I think the league has been very smart to say, hey, look, you know, we have a lot more fans than that number might tell you to believe because people are watching in different ways or watching together or whatever. Watching illegally is another big thing, you know. And so I think the league is smart to push that. But for me, it just goes back to, like, at the end of the day, what, you know, I try not to get so caught up in what this number or that number is. What is, you know, I think every league should accept and probably has accepted this is a really treacherous, dangerous decade, right? Like this could go a lot of ways and there's nothing taken for granted about our sport's ability to maintain itself as a culturally relevant, you know, piece of day-to-day life, regardless of what the number is. So that would be how I would look at it. And then, you know, for people at the league, obviously it's critically important to tell how big of an effect did Taylor Swift have? You know, how much does it matter if this game starts at 9 or 9:30? I mean, they're thinking about all these things. And so that they need as much data as they can for that. But on the fan side, you know, I think you're just getting caught in a losing battle if you're going to start, you know, lobbing different numbers from different places at each other.
It seems like for the leagues themselves, they've had success so far. I mean, arguing, you know, all those points you just mentioned and kind of being these, you know, cornerstones of culture at large. Yeah. Do you think there's a point in time that you could foresee where it doesn't add up that way and they maybe have a reduced offer for, you know, an upcoming TV deal?
There's a point in time. It's not this next deal for sure. I mean, so there's a couple pieces that go into that. On the first of just, you know, declining relevance, of course it's possible. You know, we look 100 years ago and boxing and horse racing and baseball were the most popular sports. And now, you know, baseball's still, you know, around to some degree and the others are as well, but not nearly what they were. So in sports, it's clearly possible. I look at what happened, you know, to Hollywood and to Marvel specifically. And, you know, Marvel was the biggest thing in culture 8 years ago. And, you know, I think we could spend a lot of time talking about what they did well or not well, but I think there's a lot of lessons learned there in that, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, your content needs to be good and entertaining and engaging. Otherwise people will find something else. They're not tied to, you know, they're not going to stick around to see how the story ends. They're not going to stick around just to see how somebody's career ends, how their team does, especially now more than ever. And so, I don't think it's taken for granted, but the other piece of this you have to keep in mind is the, you know, the media company part of this. And that is, you know, something that I follow as much as I can as well, but these companies need the money to spend on the NBA, right? So we'll see if in 8 years, you know, what Warner Brothers Discovery, which owns TNT, what that looks like as a company, if they can continue to fund the NBA to this degree, what ESPN, what Disney looks like. So the NBA kind of needs itself and its media partners to thrive in this moment if it wants these numbers to continue to go up. And then getting back to where we started this conversation, you want to have one extra seat at the table, right? The reason these deals go up and up and up is because there's more companies that want the rights than there are pieces of rights to go around. And so that's why it's so important to these leagues that YouTube and Netflix and Amazon and Apple are coming to the table and being interested in these rights, because then that's how you charge more and more, because there's only so much to go around.
Man, that is a fantastic side of that point that I never really hear spelled out like that. Mm. Yeah, great point. Mm.
So I want to ask you specifically about Netflix. They recently signed a deal with WWE, and I've always been curious over the years. Their name has popped up in numerous sports rights negotiations, but yet they've never really taken the jump until most recently. Where do you think their future lies in terms of sports rights? Because even when you look at their app compared to Paramount, Peacock, even Apple TV Plus, it seems a little bit antiquated, more on the entertainment side as opposed to the sports side. Even, I think it was the Netflix CEO was saying when they acquired WWE, it was more of the entertainment acquisition as opposed to a sports acquisition. So are they really serious about sports? Like how, because every time they pop up, I'm like, are they really serious about sports? Are they, what is happening, do you think, with Netflix in the relationship with live sports?
It's a fascinating company. I mean, in some ways, they kind of stumbled into being a sports broadcaster, right? I don't think anyone expected Formula One Drive to Survive to have the success it did, and then all of a sudden every league wanted to have a Netflix show. So you know, all the reports indicate that NBA is going to have one. It's filming right now reportedly, and will be, you know, on their service before next season. NFL launched their quarterback show. I mean, you know, that's the biggest game in town, saying, hey, we need to be on Netflix too. So all of a sudden they have and every league down the line, golf, tennis, NASCAR, there's a track and field, there's a rugby show, there's a cycling show. Every league has one now, right? So they developed this massive catalog of sports content, and now they're like, we got the sports fans here. How do we keep them? How do we continue to grow that size of the audience? The other interesting thing about Netflix is that they'll never do something until they do it, right? They'll never have ads until they do it. They'll never cut down on passwords until all of a sudden they have to do it. They'll never have live content until all of a sudden they do it. So that's just kind of more corporate philosophy, the way that they message and market is, you know, that they stick on brand until they change their minds, and then they're all of a sudden going to pivot. So they are continuing to experiment with sports. They had a golf competition that was very light on the competition, and as you were saying, and heavy on the entertainment. Then they just had early in March this tennis competition between Rafa Nadal and Carlos Alcaraz, who are two of the best tennis players in the world, and that was still an exhibition. There wasn't money on the line, but was closer to a more traditional sporting event. So you're kind of seeing them take those baby steps. WWE, as you mentioned, will be a big one. I don't think that they are right now. let me rephrase it. They'll get into sports when they have to. And right now they're doing well enough. They're big enough. They're making enough money. They don't feel like they need to pull that lever. Cause the thing about sports is they're really, really expensive. Right. And you don't have a lot of control over it. Netflix likes to own the show, decide how it wants to put it out, decide, you know, who's going to get it, when, how they're going to market it, how it fits into the schedule. Sports doesn't work that way. Right. The NFL comes to you and says, look, our games are Thursday nights, 8 o'clock, take them or leave them. And so it's not the quite the business Netflix wants to get into, but if the day comes where growth slows, where they feel like they need that next, you know, thing to get people into the service, don't be surprised at all.
That's fascinating you say that. So how is the relationship with the WWE is going to work? WWE has, they're very centered. WrestleMania is in April. Mm-hmm. SummerSlam mm-hmm. is in the summer. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. Is all of a sudden Netflix going to be controlling what WWE's business models is going to be, or you see some conflict between the two entities? I haven't really heard that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think there'll be too much conflict, and I think Netflix knows what it's signing up for. And okay. As you're saying, WWE is a very well-run organization. They're as good as anybody, right, slicing these things up and giving them to different partners and figuring out how it all fits together and keeping everybody happy. And so I don't expect that. It will be interesting to see, you know, I'm sure they'll have some other content, right? I'm sure they'll have a Rock documentary or something along those lines that maybe have him, you know, interviewing other people or whatever. I think they'll come up with some other kind of Netflix-y content that they can own. And then I think for them, this Raw situation is, you know, as much an experiment as anything else. Let's see how this works. Let's see who comes in, when they come in, whether they stay subscribed, all that stuff. They're definitely the ones who are learning from WWE in this situation, I think, rather than the other way around.
So in that sense, Jacob, do you get the sense that this WWE deal is a bigger deal for Netflix than for WWE?
It's interesting. I would say it's a bigger deal for sports than for Netflix. I mean, just the idea that you're going to have, again, another player in this space. You're going to introduce sports or sport entertainment or whatever to all these Netflix fans worldwide. I think we've seen a lot of sports crossover into WWE with, you know, athletes showing up and stuff. So I think it's going to be a great foothold for sports. So I was going to prioritize it, you know, sports one. Second, I think I would probably put Netflix there number two, just because it is so different from what they have done. And if it's successful, I think won't be the last thing they do. And then three, I would put WWE. I think it's a great step for WWE. I think they're a big winner in this for sure. To go on this service that is so young, that is so international, that is so experimental. I think it's going to be fantastic for them as they continue to kind of bridge the gap to the next generation. But they have other streaming services that they work with. This is not, you know, their only property. So they're not as all in, I would say, I guess, as some of these other players might be. Which I think is a great position to be in for them. If it works, they can move more there. If not, they can kind of go back to what they had been doing in the past.
No, that makes sense. That they've always been on the forefront of just the cutting edge in terms of the WWE network, and then you know, pivoting to Peacock. So it'll be interesting to see. Jacob, this has been a fantastic chat. Thank you very much for joining us. Please let our listeners and viewers know where you can find you on social media, any other products you're working on as well.
Sure. Yeah, you can find me most anywhere. You know, Twitter or X is where I'm most active. I'm at Jacob Feldman 4 there. Messing around on LinkedIn. So if you're a LinkedIn peruser, you can find me by my name, Jacob Feldman, sportico.com. And we've got a series of newsletters if you want to kind of keep up on almost everything happening in sports business. We touched on a few of them here, but there's plenty and plenty more to come. But yeah, search Jacob Feldman Sportico. I'll come up wherever you like to follow.
Awesome, Jacob. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
No, it's been a ton of fun. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.